Good afternoon, and thank you for attending my presentation entitled Finding a Voice, Enhancing Opportunity, Findings from a Qualitative Study of Guatemalan Mayan Women on the Intersection of Social Networks, Reproductive Health, and Economic Empowerment. It's a mouthful, but it's really exciting research, so I hope you enjoy the presentation. My name is Alexandra Sutton, and this was completed with Genevieve Leupold and Dr. Tilly Gurman. All of us were from the George Washington University. Again, I'm Alexandra Sutton, and I have no personal financial relationships to disclose. So following this presentation, you should be able to identify the benefits of social networks from a reproductive health standpoint, describe the interaction of social networks and economic engagement, and discuss how being involved in a women's group can increase an individual's self-efficacy. So to begin, Indigenous Mayan young women in Guatemala are disproportionately affected by teenage pregnancy and poverty. Almost about 50% of Indigenous women between the ages of 20 and 24 became mothers during their teenage years. And further contributing to the difficulties that arise with teenage pregnancy, almost 90% of Indigenous households in Guatemala live below the poverty line. So, however, even though Indigenous young women face many challenges, social networks are really strong among Indigenous people, and they often serve as channels for the distribution of information and also influence behavior and decision making. So, however, there's no research available that looks at the interplay of social networks, reproductive health, and economic empowerment. So the purpose of this study was to explore the role of social networks in advancing reproductive health and economic empowerment among this group of women. The study took place in August of 2010 in the Western Highlands region of Guatemala. So that's like the western central area of the country. And we were mostly in the beautiful city of Chimaltenango, if you're familiar with Guatemala and being really sarcastic. We conducted 19 in-depth interviews with women ages 18 to 40 who were past or current members of a reproductive health Indigenous women's group. And the interviews lasted between 2 to 3 hours and addressed topics including their personal experience with the group, their aspirations for the future, and attitudes towards reproductive health and income generation or employment. And then later the data were analyzed using the grounded theory approach. So three main themes emerged from the data, the first being that social networks provide support for women. This group allowed the women to collaborate with each other with women in their home communities and neighboring communities, and then in the larger region. They could share their life experiences and also learn from each other and identify with being a Mayan woman. A 24-year-old participant shared, "I've had the opportunity to meet more participants, and it's been really nice learning together." They were also taught about planning for their future and encouraged to set and work toward life goals. Another participant said, "When I began to participate, I saw that it was really important to have a life plan. My plan was to keep studying and get a degree. And with their help, I'm doing what I said I would." And at that point, she was finishing up high school, so she was really excited about that. The solidarity experienced among the group and the women acted as a reason for remaining in the country. When many people in these communities either emigrate to Guatemala City to find employment or either Mexico, the United States, or Canada. A 23-year-old mother claimed, "One of my friends was participating but went to the United States. I thought about it, but I don't want to leave the group." So the second theme that emerged was that social networks help women find a voice. It was often stated that before participating, they felt like they had very low self-esteem and low self, self-confidence, but through participation, their confidence and esteem both improved. They also commonly stated that they felt like this fear of expressing themselves in public, but this also was helped through participation. They also felt more capable of performing certain behaviors and were confident in their abilities to reach their goals. A young widow said, "They've given us trainings on self-esteem, leadership, and all of this has helped bring back meaning to my life. I also realize that I have abilities that I didn't know I had." And as I said before, the women felt this new sense of empowerment to speak in public. Another woman shared, "Before participating, I didn't like to talk in public, but now who can shut me up?" And several women also claimed that they had the opportunity to and felt confident and comfortable with approaching government officials for whatever reason they stated, but they felt capable of doing that. And also women claimed that they felt comfortable in addressing their community, girls, their parents, whoever in their community, with different topics that were sort of taboo in their communities, like sexual and reproductive health. And so the third theme was that social networks enhance opportunities for women. There was very commonly expressed that there's this innate desire to learn. However, many of the women didn't have much formal education. So they ranged in having a first grade education to some of them were in the university studying. However, all of them stated that education was viewed as an important factor in succeeding. And the group viewed their participation as an opportunity to continue learning. An older participant said, "I'm happy that they gave me the opportunity to participate in the network and learn about things that I always wanted to understand. I take advantage of every workshop now, and I'm learning many things." So the way that the group worked was you'd have your smaller community groups, and so there was a leader, and you would all get together and learn about different topics like self-esteem, communication, political involvement, and sexual and reproductive health. And then they also would have the opportunity during different times in the year to get together for workshops and talk with women and continue learning with women throughout the region. A participant stated, "What I've learned most about are the themes. Before, I knew a little bit about them, but not very much. But through studying and talking to the other girls, you learn. This way, they learn from me, and I learn from them." So they were exposed to these new ideas, but also new manual skills. As part of the group, they received training on traditional artisanry techniques. So they would sit around and learn these new topics, but also they would learn like how to a new technique for weaving. Guatemala, they have the indigenous beautiful like weavings and just indigenous artisanry. So they learned these new techniques, and some of the women were already selling their products, and others expressed the desire to sell them at some point. So the findings highlighted the benefits or the potential benefits of using social networks to promote reproductive health and income generation, which in turn would lead to economic empowerment. The social networks themselves provided the women with an opportunity to collaborate and have this sense of support. And it was a space to learn new concepts and skills, and as well as they increased their self-efficacy and self-esteem. They also learned about reproductive health information, and they were confident and comfortable to approach people in their communities with this new information and just disseminate it, spread it out through their hometowns. They also gained these new skills and set goals for the future, and they understood what they needed to do to develop professionally in order to reach those goals. So playing off the benefits of the social support found within the groups could make for some really interesting approaches to health education and promotion. First, combining the the benefits of social networks with reproductive health activities and income generation or economic empowerment could provide a really well-rounded experience for the participants and give them the motivation and agency to improve their living conditions. They also gain skills and new abilities that they could develop and use to and help them in finding a job. Secondly, based on the importance of social support and the notion that these women feel more empowered to go out and talk about taboo topics or any kind of topics in their hometowns, there is potential benefit in utilizing social groups and the dissemination of innovative concepts. And I personally believe that if you disseminate this information and people are familiar with these new ideas, that maybe it has the potential to foster an environment where women are more capable of taking control of their reproductive health. And lastly, further research is necessary to determine if these results could transfer to other communities, other settings. So in conclusion, social networks can play a positive role in addressing reproductive health issues and income inequality among young Mayan women in Guatemala, particularly through modifications in self-efficacy. Then again, further research would assess the reliability of the findings in other settings. So, thank you.
We have some time for questions.
As far as expansion to other topics, do you mean actually displaying that information on the webpage along with the education?
I guess in showing quantifiable relationships between income, education, and the social determinants.
Did you have a comment on that before I respond, or somebody raised their hand behind you? Okay. I think that would be fantastic, and it's one of the things that we did explore when we talked to the foundation about it and looking at, for example, when you go to the County Health Rankings page, have you visited County Health Rankings? Okay. So there's links to County Health Rankings from the County Health Calculator, and that has information about crime. It has information about liquor store density and lots of other community characteristics. It also has multiple health outcomes, so infant mortality, low birth weight, I think obesity prevalence. It reports all of the data at a county level for all of the counties in the United States. And we looked at how much of the data from the county health rankings should we link in with the county health calculator. So, for example, having when the slider moves, all of those indicators change kind of in the bottom. From a messaging standpoint, we got the feedback that would be a little bit overwhelming for users. So that was the reason that we didn't decide to do that. However, you can link that in with the county health rankings. I would encourage you to explore the data available there.
One thing that is I wanted to say is that all these presentations have something in common that I wish to express, and it is that there's a lot that can be done, but that mostly what we're seeing here is that we as citizens, we as people in public health field and in our diverse roles as from where we come from, we need to take control of a lot of these, of what is going on. Listen to the voices, as we have heard from these studies, and look at the signs, not just trust whatever is being proposed, but really take an active action. In Puerto Rico, for example, McDonald's and Burger King sell native food. They will include the most highest in fat and in sodium or sugar of our native dishes, so that you know we will go there and buy the tostones, if you know what that is, fried plantain, and other things that are really not good for us. So it's really important to see this community, this citizen work towards combating this.
My name is Amelita Capuzzo. I'm professor at the University of Puerto Rico School of Medicine. And my question is addressed to Julian.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the election system in the U.S. is almost impossible to understand anybody outside of the United States.
Yep.
If the local citizens can understand it. But as you were talking about the amount of money that goes into lobbying congressmen and women, it is so scary, and I was wondering whether it would be possible for U.S. citizens to demand that their congress candidates disclose where the funding for their campaign is coming from,
yeah,
and threaten them rather than allow the food corporations to threaten all of us,
yeah,
threaten Congress people not to vote for them,
yeah,
at all if they are being supported by the enemies of public health.
Right. I mean, it's definitely campaign finance reform is a big beast and one that really needs to be addressed in a number of ways. It's hard because in some ways we've taken a lot of steps forward in terms of campaign finance reform and different disclosure laws. And in a lot of ways we've taken steps back with Citizens United and other things that talk about corporate personhood. It is something that our organization as a whole is looking to address because it is something that affects all three of our campaigns and all of us, in this country. But I think for a lot of us, Citizens United and overturning Citizens United and adding an amendment is one of the key ways that we can really move forward on that issue. But it's a big one. It's really difficult. And yeah, given the power imbalances, I don't expect it to happen anytime soon, unfortunately. So.
That would certainly change the panorama, the political panorama. Yes, and in many countries they have passed laws that have helped, let's say, diminish the crime rate. For example, Medellin, Colombia. How have they done this? They have dedicated 40% of their income on education. Talking about one of the determinants of health. So it looks like far fetched, but it is possible.
Showed how the
the lobbyists that used to work for Big Tobacco, Nestle, et cetera, now work for the food industry. And we know from those of us who actually lived through the whole Nestle thing and tobacco that when things get hot in the States, they go overseas.
Yeah.
And I wonder if you're looking at anything like that that might be a little broader than just perhaps McDonald's and some of the other food industry and the marketing and products overseas.
So why we went down to Guatemala was to conduct formative research to see if these women would be interested in forming like a weaving cooperative, like adding a component, like an income generating component to their already existing activities. So we didn't do any evaluation of behavior change. That definitely would be something if we continue working with the project that we'd want to look into and see if there is a direct correlation between being in this social network and changing behavior. But that's sadly not something that we looked at quite yet.
To address your second question, it's definitely something we're concerned about as well, and McDonald's obviously and other fast food corporations have already begun expanding overseas rapidly. It is something that we, you know, just in terms of scope of the campaign, we're focusing on the U.S. right now. But we are continuing a lot of our efforts with the WHO and the non-communicable diseases group on both tobacco and food, and we are rapidly trying to move into the international expansion of the campaign. And hopefully, within a few years, you'll see more of that because it is a huge concern. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Are you aware that a mile away is McDonald's government relations building? It's about a 5-story building. It's beautiful.
I bet.
There's the Still Spirits of America. Huge, beautiful marble building. I mean, these people have serious wealth. And, you know, we're poor public health. And it's, you know, it's almost like Sisyphus and doing the thing up the hill, you know? I know, and I got to say, I come from a very conservative medical organization, and I'm tasked with promoting social determinants of health, and the thing that kicks doctors off is the word social. Social medicine, socialism, socialistic. This is supported by the socialistic doctrine,
yeah,
which is
yep.
Cool. But I'm saying, it's not cool with a lot of docs, and I recently joined this section, by the way, and came from medical care. That's another story. And one of our colleagues said, you know, social is a hot button word, regardless of which it is. And so she suggested structural determinants of health. And that's much more palatable,
yes.
And it really kind of addresses the more complexity of everything,
mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
I really love that, so I'm going to go back and like,
good.
How about structural determinants of health? You know, see if that flies, and I'll let
mm-hmm.
you know next year.
Good, yeah, good idea. Yeah. We'll try that too.
They changed the name of the family planning for health, and they gave that. I'm sure that
Any more questions?
Yes, I was just wondering, for the women in Guatemala, these new behaviors, did they share how that has changed the dynamics in their families, in their communities? Because, I don't know, some communities may not be so embracing of this new voice that has found. So I was just wondering.
Yeah, that is a really good question. For the most part, it was very positive, I felt. The girls expressed that their parents at first were a little hesitant, like, I don't know if you should get involved with that. But then once they saw like the changes in their daughters, they were more supportive. And I remember one woman quoted, she said, and she was from a really distant, like, we had to walk up a mountain to meet her just halfway to her home community. And she said that her parents agreed that if you stay at home, you learn, but you learn things in the kitchen. You don't actually learn anything else, so you need to get out and get involved. So I think that was the main undertone, is that they did find support with their families. And then just like their immediate networks, like their friends from school or what have you, they started to come to those women and like try like asking questions, because like condom use and things like that are kind of taboo. So like they knew that they could go to these girls, and they had an understanding that wasn't so popular or common. So I think for the most part it's kind of a positive. The community view this as kind of as helping the girls and helping the community themselves.
Follow up on that. Like in India and Bangladesh, there's small loan programs for women. Mm-hmm. Is there anything like that going on in Guatemala?
There are. I can't name anything in particular right now, but I know that there are some kind of like cooperatives or like micro loans going on there. So if we move forward with this cooperative, we're going to look into how to get funding, the different ways of getting funding for that.
Anyone else? Well, I would like to thank our presenters today. I would also like to thank Sandia Sari Hogan for assisting us in this session, and encourage you to attend other sessions of the Public Health Education and Promotion section, and of course to join our section as well. So thank you, and please last applause for us.